Rose, my love.
Jay, my Romeo.
Hello and welcome to episode 65 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hello!
Hi!
So this week we are ditching our Hot Topic section because we want to talk about two movies, not one. We're going to talk about Slow West and then we're going to talk about Maggie, both of which are coming out in limited release this weekend. And then we're going to finish up with a caption contest. So first off, Slow West. Christy, it's all you.
Yeah, so we talked to you guys a little bit about Slow West in our most anticipated of summer episode, and it's coming! It's not this week, it's actually next week, but we wanted to talk about it in enough time that you guys can plan accordingly. So Slow West follows a 16-year-old boy on a journey across 19th century frontier America in search of the woman he loves while accompanied by a mysterious traveler named Silas. Now, the main character is a romantic who is setting forth in the West to find his love. But the mysterious traveler is Michael Fassbender, and he has secrets. And also, guys, Ben Mendelsohn. So you've got, two guys that you're, looking at. You're like, oh, danger zone. What is happening? And then you've got poor little Cody Smith McPhee. And guys, it is such a fun movie. As we've talked about before, Slow West is a terrible title for this movie because it is not a slow movie. And though it is a Western,
doesn't mean anything.
A title that means nothing to do with Perry and I have both interviewed people from the cast and asked them this question. And they're like, "Ooh."
I spoke to Michael Fassbender the other day, who's the executive producer on this movie. I'm like, so what does that title mean? He's like, well, West, West, and they're going there slowly.
It's an arty title that makes this sound niche when it's not that niche a movie. It's actually very funny and, I think very interesting. And I'm a big Western fan, but I went in expecting it to be a dry Western. Yeah, a slow Western. I was like, let's strap in. I've had coffee. I'm gonna be fine. And instead, it was really funny and spirited. And it starts off with this kind of wry sense of humor. But then as the movie builds, it gets kind of silly, but in a really great way where it feels dangerous and exciting and modern. And I'm just really excited. Right now, Slow West might be my favorite movie of the year. It's this and this with Ex Machina. I'm really into this movie.
I feel like the movie, there's a fairy tale feel to it. It almost at some points feels like a Wes Anderson movie. It has that kind of same whimsical kind of a little bit bittersweet, but really cute look
The thing
feel,
with the long johns. I'm not going to say what it is, but the thing with the long johns, I think, falls completely into that kind of.
Yeah, it feels a little bit Wes Anderson-y, but it's a little bit deeper than you would think based on every time you think it's going to completely go off into the air, something happens to bring it back down. Something happens to puncture that cutesy twee little bubble that this romantic played by Cody Smith McPhee basically lives in.
It's actually genuinely scary at times. Yeah. I fear for their lives for the large majority of the time in this movie.
Yeah, they describe him as a jackrabbit and a rabbit in the midst of wolves, and he has no idea. And the first time he runs into trouble, he's going through his luggage and he has a ceramic teapot and stuff, and you're just like, honey,
he has an actual tour guide. It's a guide to the West, and you're just oh buddy,
it's just so sweet. And it's interesting because it's the movie takes on his perspective, so when he looks at the stars, they sparkle, and it's a really beautiful movie, the way they shoot everything. And it's actually shot in New Zealand, which I didn't know, so the whole time I was watching the movie I had this very misplaced sense of nationalism where I was like, go America, you're gorgeous. And we have gorgeous landscapes. They are just not on display in this movie.
Well, I'm going to bring it down just a little bit. So, Christy obviously put this as the, up top for our most anticipated movies of the year. It wasn't number one. I forget what number we made it, but it was up there. And I walked in expecting, something really, really special. And I don't know if it struck a chord in that respect, but I will confirm that it had, a very fun, unique vibe. And after having seen so many super depressing Tribeca movies, this was surprisingly refreshing. But, in the end, it's not it really gives you all that much to hold on to in the end. It's more about just the fun of going on this adventure.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it gets dark in the end. I was like, that's true, but I don't agree. I really love the ending. I thought it was interesting.
I did not like the ending. It's just, it kind of like was what it was, and then I left it, you know?
Yeah, but one thing I liked about it is that we were talking about how it has such like a whimsical feel, and it takes on the point of view of this character who's very idealistic and such a dreamer, but things keep puncturing it, and at the end of the movie, you're actually left with the weight of like all the horrible things that have happened throughout the movie, which I wasn't expecting, because, you know, you're just kind of going on an adventure, some bad things happen, and at the end, they basically kind of like remind you of all that, and it gives you a sense of like how hard won the West was.
They don't let their characters just ride off into the sunset and everything's forgiven. Like John McClane, who wrote and directed this movie, it's his first movie, his first feature, and it just feels so smart and thoughtful, and he doesn't want to let us off the hook exactly. And in that respect, it again reminded me a lot of Ex Machina, where I love the ending of Ex Machina, but it doesn't let you get away with a happy ending. Like, it felt complicated to me, and it felt interesting, and the acting in this is just fantastic. Also, for Game of Thrones fans, the Hound is in this movie, which made me so excited when I realized, because I was like,
he's not in it enough.
Because this guy looks familiar right here. Not here or here so much, but this right here, that was a Tommy Boy reference, guys. Just scoop that up for you.
That was brilliant. Let's talk about Ben Mendelsohn.
Oh, yes. It's his epic fur coat.
Ben Mendelsohn in a fur coat. Shit, I wouldn't want to go up against
that. The most epic fur coat that ever fur coated.
Yeah. Guys, look for next week. I'm going to have an interview go up with Ben Mendelsohn where we talk specifically about that fur coat. And he is so fun. We had a really great conversation. But yeah, I said to him when we talked, I was like, you come on screen and you've played so many bad guys. And he interrupted me and he was like, you know, when I show up, bad things are about to happen. And I was like, yeah.
I had that same conversation with the director of Black Sea earlier in the year. Because like in that movie, yeah, Ben Mendelsohn shows up and shit happens. Because
yeah, in that movie, they describe his character. Like, oh, like Danny the Diver is kind of a psycho. And then they cut to Ben Mendelsohn. Is like, you didn't need that line. We're good. We understand. Like, because he was also in Startup, as you guys remember, we really loved. Ben Mendelsohn he's an Australian actor who we became aware of during Animal Kingdom. And since then, he has just played like one role after another where he is just fucking terrifying. Right now, he's on Bloodline on Netflix. He's just good at embodying danger. And like, it's great because as soon as he shows up in the movie, you don't need a backstory for his character. You're just like, oh, guys, they need to get away from here.
You know how I really dug in this movie? I liked the girlfriend. What's her name again?
That he Rose?
Yeah, Rose. I don't know. It was just like a really unique way to approach that kind of role. I kind of wasn't expecting her to be what she was when we got there without her name spoiling is anything, Historis, but... Like, she fucking kills it in the third act of this movie.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's another example of how the movie kind of lets you, like, fall into this guy's point of view, and then the more you get to know about this world and the people in it and, like, the way things really are, the more you're just like, oh, that's not what it is at all. One of the things that I enjoyed about it is how much that kind of ties into to sort of the West being lost. Like, you see kind of an old way of life slipping away and a new one coming in, and it's part of this like sadness that kind of pervades the whole movie, even though it's like mostly, I don't mean to make it sound like it's a depressing movie, it's really not, but I feel like the fact that there's so much like kind of like deep and like sad about this movie at some level made the fact that it was so upbeat so much more unique and unusual and interesting.
Yeah, I as I said, I just think this is a really interesting movie. I think the dialogue and the visuals, and it's something unlike anything I've seen before, really. And it's coming out in the middle of, like, summer spectacles, so, like, it's kind of intense. Because, like, you know, I'm a little worried it's going to get overlooked, but if Slow West is coming to a theater near you, do yourself a favor. Go see it, because
it's kind of funny that it's coming out against Mad Max, which is a completely different type of, like, road adventure movie.
It's true.
That's a good point.
It's true. But, guys, you're going to have weeks upon weeks to go see Mad Max Fury Road. Like, just go see Slow West while you have a chance, and, you know, I think you'll love it. It's outstanding.
Perry, you're the one that was a little cooler on it than others.
Well,
would you recommend it?
I mean, I would definitely recommend it. not to point a finger at you, Christy, but I really think that the only reason I'm like negative at all about it is just because, and like you weren't the only one. A lot of people, like especially at a Sundance too. I mean, it's like a typical Sundance hype type situation where everyone came out being like, "Oh my god, this movie! It's like the greatest thing ever!" And then, you know, I walked into it expecting something like mind blowing, and while I enjoyed what I got, it wasn't what I thought I was going to get.
Okay. So in conclusion, watch it. It's amazing, but really it's not that good. But really you should still see it.
I agree with you that it's not what I expected, but for me that was amazing. So I think it's really original and fun. It's a take on the genre we haven't seen before, much like our next movie.
A lot of feels about Maggie. But first, the synopsis. A teenage girl in the Midwest becomes infected by an outbreak of a disease that slowly turns the infected into cannibals. Tick zombies?
Cannibalistic.
Oh, cannibalistic. It's separated on my line. So I'm like, what the fuck? I swear.
Excuses.
Tick is on another line. Anyway, during her transformation, her loving father stays by her side. All right. First off, before I like get too ahead of myself, I want to say that Maggie is not a bad movie. It's not a poorly made movie by any means. It's just, I think this is one of the biggest missed opportunities I've seen in a really long time. So it's this brilliant idea where it puts a really unique spin on the zombie apocalypse genre. Because how many times have we seen zombie apocalypses where, you know, people get into groups and they fight and they cut heads off and, you know, all that stuff. This is actually like a really deep, intense, personal experience. And it's like, what if someone got bit and didn't drop dead and reanimate? It's like, what if it was more like a cancer and a disease? And it's like really freaking heartbreaking to have to watch a one man's daughter have like this, I forget exactly how many weeks, but it's eight. Like over, it's eight. And then at some point, doesn't someone say two? That's why I'm never quite clear about it. But like she devolves into a zombie over the course of however many weeks. And he's got to just like sit there and watch her. And it makes you think, you know, would you just kind of like kill your loved one and get it over with? Would you send them over to the quarantine area? Or would you do what he did and like stretch it out as long as you possibly can? It's a really interesting thing to think about. The problem is like, it just is that in the movie. They don't really do anything to dig deep or show interesting scenarios. It's basically just like Arnold Schwarzenegger brings Abigail Breslin home and the two of them like mope and they're all like sad face and like that. I mean, that's really it. Except when she goes and hangs out with her high school friends, which is my favorite part of the movie.
It's really strange because when I heard about, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's in a zombie movie called Maggie, I, like most other people, assumed it would be Arnold Schwarzenegger kicking lots of zombie butt. And I like that it's not. I think it's an interesting thing. I think he does a very good job playing a heartbroken dad. And I think it is powerful to watch someone who for decades we have seen be invincible on camera not be able to fix it. Like, it doesn't matter what he does. It doesn't matter how strong he is. He can't save Maggie from degenerating into, you know, a zombie. The thing I don't like about it is, as Perry pointed out, it's just all here. I mean, like, the whole movie is just grim and bleak, and there's no moments of anything else. And it just feels like, well, no, I got this. Now what else? And, you know, I don't think it just feels there's not enough colors to it. It just becomes very kind of like, and another thing that sucks about the apocalypse.
Literally, there's not enough color to it. Like, I think, didn't I say that to you after? Like, it looked like every time Abigail Breslin was on frame, the color was, like, purposely, like, stripped out. It was weird and distracting.
It kind of feels like they had this, like, amazing idea, because I, too, love the idea. Like, when I first heard about this movie, I was just like, oh, that's great, because, you know, in every zombie movie, especially the ones that consider themselves more serious, you'll have that scene where someone's loved one gets infected, and then there's a lot of angst and drama around it. And I was like, oh, that's actually such a rich premise for a movie. Like, I can't wait to see what they do with it. And then you got Arnold Schwarzenegger, and as Christy said, like, he is really good, actually, at doing this dramatic, kind of smaller-scale acting thing. And it is, as she pointed out, more heartbreaking because you see this guy having this one thing that he can't solve. But it kind of feels like they were like, all right, guys, we have a good idea, we have a great star. And then they just kind of stop there. Like, from then on, it feels kind of like baseline competent to the point where I can't really complain and say this is like horribly made and I have no idea what they're doing. It just feels like they didn't really try that hard. One of the biggest problems I had with this movie is that there's so little like personality or texture to it. The whole setting and all the costumes are just sort of like very generic, like poor Midwestern farmer people. You know, and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Abigail Breslin have decent chemistry, but you really never get to know these characters or any of the other characters around them. So it doesn't, so I just didn't really feel as sad as I feel like I should have. Like
it was
just
weird,
like,
for me, because they interject a stepmom character who I feel like adds very little to the narrative, because they promoted,
I wonder if
like
she had more to do in like a previous draft or something.
Going back to the idea of this movie having a great concept and going nowhere with it, it's crazy because I feel like it was like on the cut, like it had the pieces that it needed to make that happen. And there's one of them, Julia Richardson coming in as the stepmom. That's a really freaking interesting dynamic. Not just like an evil stepmother who's like, leave your daughter, but like,
but genuinely,
she really loves Arnold Schwarzenegger and she does genuinely care about Maggie, but they have two other kids that are their own. That is like a really intense internal and outward struggle between the family where they should have had more dialogue about that. And then the other thing,
but instead
was,
you get her like side-eyeing Maggie when Maggie's being like pretty gross, really, because she is dying. And then, like, you know, at one point she says something about, like, maybe we should do something. But, like, you never – there's never – they never rev up the conflict of it. And it just feels like a missed opportunity because everything – it's like, you know, just because Maggie is becoming a zombie doesn't mean I want to watch a movie where everyone behaves like a zombie and is just like, oh, this is upsetting.
The one time that there's some more life to the characters is that high school part, too. That feels like – again, on the verge of having conflict, where Maggie hangs out with her best friend and they go to like a bonfire. And it's really interesting to see like a whole group of healthy kids with two unhealthy kids. And I just want to point out that that kid who played her boyfriend, he was one of the best actors in the, I don't know where he came from. I don't think he has any major roles, but I'll tell you that his scene, which I'm not going to spoil, is probably the most moving scene in the entire movie.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's like, you know, what's weird is that they keep trying to make it a family drama, but ultimately it is Maggie's story. And I think Maggie's story in and of itself is muddled because like, it's Maggie and then sort of about her dad and then sort of about her stepmom. And one question I had watching it was, did Maggie get bit? And then at the beginning of the movie, he's tracking her down because she ran away. And it's like, did she get bit and then run away, or did she run away and then get bit? And like, when I interviewed the director, which you can look for on Spinoff, like he actually said that it was definitely one. He said, oh, she got bit and then she ran away. And I was like, that is not clear in the movie.
Not that this is like a fair excuse, but I asked Christy the same thing when we walked out of our screenings. Then when I went home and I read the press notes, it flat out says in the press notes that she got bit and then ran away. But it's definitely not clear in the movie. And a lot of things, little details like that, aren't clear. And I think that's just a sign of the writer and the director taking this whole idea of making a zombie movie that isn't a zombie movie a little too far, where they really did end up stripping the zombie apocalypse genre of everything that makes it fun. I mean, at this point, this might as well have been a cancer drama.
It is a cancer drama.
Pretty much.
I mean, it is.
It's really lazy. I feel like for one thing that bugged me about the movie is that, so this is happening to Maggie, and at no point does anyone ask Maggie, like, what do you think we should do?
Which, like, the whole thing is geared toward how does she...
It's such a bizarre oversight, first of all. But then second of all, maybe they don't ask her, because she's not a fucking character. After spending 90 minutes watching her in this movie, I was like, so what is Maggie like as a person? Like,
another reason I love the friend stuff, because that's the first tease you get of what life was like for her before all this shit
happened.
And you
still don't learn that much. I wanted to know like more about like what was her relationship with all these people like before she got sick? What's her actual personality like? For all I know, this is what she's always been like, and it's like not that much of a loss that she's dying and sad.
Oh, man. But I mean, you're right. It doesn't feel focused. It feels like all of a sudden at the end we're spending a lot of time with Maggie. And it just feels like if they want it to be about Maggie's journey, then the whole time it should have been a question of, like, how does Maggie want to end her life? But instead, everyone talks about it around her, which feels really condescending, frankly.
I just can't believe this script was on the blacklist. Like, I'm really curious to know what it reads like on paper.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if maybe the director kind of stripped it of something and there was something more there, but, I mean, like the dialogue
is all very, very functional.
The story isn't that great. I just don't get what people saw in this.
The dialogue is all entirely functional. It's like you can kind of like hear in your head the guy like ticking off lists, like, established father-daughter relationship, check. introduce friends, check, like, you know, and like otherwise everything that they say is just like rehashing the plot. Like, it doesn't feel like there's any sort of flavor or personality to it at all.
Yeah, I will say that Arnold Schwarzenegger was a very convincing, loving father in this. I will give him some credit, but yes. I forget who said it now, but I do not think that him and Abigail Breslin had any chemistry whatsoever. But I think it's mainly because their relationship had no arc.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest problem. It's like, they should have been butting heads at some point, but that never happened. So it was kind of just...
Yeah, because also, she's a teenage girl. Like, I get that she's dying, but like... Teenage girls fight with their parents, but instead Maggie just looks wounded and sad. Like,
and
literally,
rips up the pamphlet that I wanted to read. All I wanted in that entire movie was to read that fucking pamphlet she got in the beginning, and she tears it up.
Yeah.
And I'm busy, like, staring at the screen trying to catch the fine print. I want to know how, like, what happened. And, like, you know, at the beginning, when she goes into that facility, I forget what they call it. It's like a shelter for the infected or something. Like, I wanted a movie about that. I want to know how, like, people from the outside take care of these infected people without running the risk of becoming infected themselves.
Yeah.
How people are shipped off to quarantine versus out. I just wanted to know more
about
what this
movie
did.
I don't need the
movie
to be about that, but I wish there was a little bit more sense of the world around the characters.
Yeah, I think it was. I think we are all agreeing that it was a really interesting setup that we wished had paid off better, because the optics of it, like, Schwarzenegger, zombies, this interesting twist on the genre, and, like, you guys know us, like, we like an interesting twist on the horror genre, but this movie just feels like it's Fault in Our Stars minus the romantic leaving with zombies, which is not as cool as that sounds.
I genuinely hope that someone remakes this movie and, like, brings this premise to its potential, because this is such a waste. It kind of breaks my heart. Like, I hate the fact that I have to be... And, like, again, I want to say it's not like anybody involved is an atrocious filmmaker who should never make a movie again. I think it's kind of just, you know, a big mashup of people not having the right ideas or not really knowing what to do with what they have. But I don't know. Don't see this movie, and let's just keep our fingers crossed it gets remade.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Schwarzenegger completist, I guess, but I, it's just not fun enough or interesting enough for me to say you should spend money to go see it.
On that note, sorry, I'm going to cut you off now. We're going to move on to something that we all did spend our money on, or at any rate, that a lot of people spent their money on, which is the Avengers Age of Ultron game from last week. Was that a good transition? Yeah, I think
sure.
It was fine.
Yeah, it's
killed it.
All right, great. So, last week we asked you to pitch us a spinoff of Avengers Age of Ultron that you wanted to see, and our winner is Sarah M. at Sarah Jo Smiley, and she says she would like to see a S.H.I.E.L.D. show that's basically like The Office and super mundane, but every now and then Thor flies past the window. And I love this one because that's actually what I secretly deep down wish that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was about. Like, if that whole show were just a sitcom about them fucking around the office and having, like, office Olympics and shit, and then every once in a while something superpowered happens, I would love it. But
that would be hilarious.
Anyway,
I would completely
watch that.
Exactly.
That sounds like an Adult Swim
Sarah,
show. I'd watch that.
We're with you on this. I mean, I think it's kind of a piece with that party scene from Avengers being the best scene. But anyway, that was last week's episode, so we shall move on. All right, so our new game for this week is we are going to ask you to caption this still from Star Wars The Force Awakens. Admire it, enjoy it, you know, revel in its beauty, and tell us what you think is going on in this picture.
All right, so that is a wrap on episode 65 of Popcorn and Prosecco. As Angie just pointed out, tweet at us at Popcorn Prosecco. That's where you can answer our caption contest. Go on Facebook and like us. You can go and watch on iTunes and listen on iTunes. And you can also watch us on YouTube. We also have a website, popcornprosecco.com. And all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes. You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN. And I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I write all over the web, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is at PNemiroff. So, thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.
I made a promise to your mother that I would protect you.